My name is Ryan Nagelkirk. I'm from Michigan State University. I'm a PhD student with Bruno Basso, and I'm going to be presenting some of the work that we've been doing to model the effects of climate change on maize yields in the Midwest. So for a quick overview, I'll go through our funding source because it's kind of a unique opportunity, at least for me as a graduate student, because it's a large interdisciplinary project with 10 different universities working together for one kind of common goal. And then I'll go into the introduction and rationale of our project, the procedure that we've been doing or using, and some preliminary findings. Right now we're about halfway through it, so I don't have any final results to show. And then go over some of the future work. So first, the Corn-Based Cropping Systems Coordinated Agricultural Project, otherwise known as the CSCAP, or otherwise known as the Sustainable Corn Project, funded by the USDA, National Institute for Food and Agriculture. This is a picture from our annual meeting, and those are the 10 universities that are involved, along with the USDA Agricultural Research Service. And just to prove that I am a part of it, I'm sure you can tell that's me there in the back, and Bruno is right here in the front. So to show where these universities are and the field sites associated with them, along with the 2010% of U.S. total grain harvest in these 9 states that we're working in, the blue, the darker the blue is, the higher the yields or the higher the total grain harvest for that state. Michigan is pretty low at 3% for corn. But when you add these 9 states up, it's almost 70% of the U.S.'s production. And so that's fairly significant, and so it's fun to be a part of this project in these states that are such large contributors for our grain production. The stars that you see in there are the individual universities and institutions, and then most of these universities have field locations also where they're doing field experiments, MSU being one of those, and the looks kind of like brown there, that's supposed to be orange circles, are those field sites. So, I mean, the overarching thought is, of course, that climate change has major implications for agriculture, and that's one of our rationales. And that being longer growing seasons, warmer winters and nights, and then, of course, the prospect of more severe precipitation, both being more severe and happening more often. So when you look at this at a national level, you can look at 2 things, one of them being the change in the number of consecutive dry days and then the change in the number of hot nights. So if we look at the left side, the left figure, for the Midwest and the U.S. as a whole, pretty much most of the areas are projected to have an increase in consecutive dry days. So an increase in droughts is a way to think of it. And then to the right, we're seeing throughout the U.S., everywhere this time in the U.S., there's at least some increase in the number of hot nights. In the Midwest, we're ranging anywhere from 20 to 60 more days per year with what they termed as hot nights in the IPCC AR5 report. But then specifically in the Midwest, climate change has the potential to reduce corn production. And so we want to look into modeling this to see what kind of solutions we might have. So modeling then the entire region, which I'm excited to do, instead of just a few sites throughout the region, we're trying to model all the fields that have had corn in the Midwest in the last 6 years. And that gives us an estimate of local magnitudes and causalities for those specific areas. And then we can test potential adaptations in each of them. And modeling also, of course, generally gives us foresight into adaptations that might, on their own, require years of research and development before they can be implemented. One of the major things that would be is something like advanced cultivars that are more drought and heat tolerant, that you can't just instantly go out. A short-term solution is just planting earlier. You know, you don't need to do a whole lot of R&D for that. Farmers can just go out and plant earlier. Some of our hypotheses in this project have been, one simple one being that the projected warming and precipitation changes will probably, well, it's a hypothesis, so you have to state it, you can't say probably, will reduce yields under traditional management. And then in the low to moderate scenarios, early planting and long season varieties will be enough to prevent losses in most areas, while some will require additional nutrients and water resources. But then as you go into the higher emission scenarios, you're probably going to have to get into changes in cultivars and advanced genetics that are going to improve drought and heat tolerance and we think those would be essential in those higher mission scenarios. So we'll get into the procedure. One of the first things we had to do was determine the location of cornfields and the soils beneath them. For that, we used the NAS crop data layers and Sergo soils data. And then we went into acquiring the daily weather and climate projections. For this, instead of using CMIP-3, we wanted to take the new data and get the CMIP-5, which took some time. If any of you have worked with that, you know about it. And we used the ensembles from that. Then we'll be modeling the past and future yields. And then we'll be able to map those yields along with any associated stresses that we see in the model to specific areas. And then we'll model the effects of adaptation strategies. Some might be irrigation, early planting, and adapted cultivars. The model that we're using was developed by Bruno at Michigan State University in association with Joe Ritchie. It's called the Systems Approach for Land Use Sustainability, or SALUS. And what it takes as input data is weather, and it has to be daily weather, and I'll get into more of that in a second. Soil characteristics, the site-specific management, and then the crop, of course, that you're growing. And I could go into more of those. There's a lot more detail to it, so it's not that simple. But it goes into three modules then, the crop growth modules, the soil water balance, and the soil organic matter and nutrient model. And what we get out of the model at the end, some examples being crop yield, soil biochemistry, soil water balance, and soil temperature. So, okay, starting with the soils, we started with the USDA NAS crop data layers. It's the National Agricultural Statistical Service. And this is what it looks like for the Midwest, or at least 9 states in the Midwest that are involved in this project. I couldn't include the key for all the different colors, all the different crop types, of course, in the Midwest, but the ones that I did include were soybeans being the green, corn being the yellow that you see throughout the whole area, and then light green is deciduous forest, and developed is the gray. And what we do then is we look at all the available years of data. There's 6 years of national data available from NAS, and we look for any fields that have had corn in that time. And what you get at the end of that is something that looks like this. And so this is specific fields down to, I think it's 30 meter by 30 meter resolution of these fields. And then what we do is extract the Sergo soils characteristics from underneath that, and you get something that looks like this. So that's how we get the soils. These are just soil map units, not soil types. Map units are different than that. They're just units that have been mapped. So even though I have a lot of colors on there, it doesn't necessarily mean all those are different soil types. But a big part of this project will just be going through that and writing a code to assimilate all these soil mapped units into actual soil texture data that we can use in the model. Then we get into daily weather. And for SALUS, we need the maximum and minimum temperatures, we need precipitation, and solar radiation. And what we want is sites for each county, ideally being centroids, of course, in those counties. The problem with station data, though, if any of you have worked with it, is that there's a lot of holes in it all the time. It's pretty inconsistent. Trying to stitch together a 30-year time series like we would want can be very difficult. So one potential solution for that we've been using is NASA's North American Land Data Simulation System, or NLDAS. And this is a product that they provide that provides hourly 8-degree grid size historical weather. And the way that they do it is they temporarily disaggregate gauge-based precipitation using, radar. I've got 4 minutes, so I'm going to kind of hurry up a little bit. And one of the things that you want to do then is compare the NLDAS versus station data. So this is temperature maximum from 1981. You can see that it's matching fairly well. And the T-min was matching pretty well too, but it wasn't great. And so in the red, if you can't see up here, is the NLDAS. Blue is the station data. I looked at another year for the minimum temperatures. This is at 2099. The year is not so important. I can get into that if we have any time at the end. But the temperature minimums were more comparable. Same thing for solar radiation. Again, NLDAS being the red and station data being the blue. And then precipitation, where the NLDAS matched the events, but not necessarily the magnitude of events. And of course, we want to look at this statistically and go through for several sites, and hopefully that'll be a paper that we can put out comparing NLDAS to station data. So this is good. And of course, what you really want to see is, does it affect the model much? Does it affect your yields at the end of the day for what you're projecting? And just from running this from one site in Ohio, we saw that NLDAS did compare well with station data. And again, we'll go through and statistically verify these things. And I should mention quickly that these graphs, the last couple, are from a project with WISA that we've been working concurrently with, the Sustainable Corn Project in Ohio, and doing similar things. So preliminary findings, just to get something up here and to show some of the ideas that we expect going forward, we modeled 8 sites from the Sustainable Corn Project, and we simulated the yields out to the end of the century. And then we ran a new management and new cultivar. The new management was planting 10 days earlier, and then having a cultivar that had a higher kernel number and a higher filling rate, and along with that, a deeper rooting system, all being characteristics that would be advantageous in the future if it gets drier and hotter. What we saw then was, to the end of the century, and this is with no adaptation, there's a slight decrease over time in corn yields, and that's, I think, what a lot of us would expect over time. But then if you implement this adaptation with the different cultivar and planting earlier, in the year 2020 is when we implemented it, and this is using RCP 4.5 projection data. And so you see an increase to about the mid-century, and with that same cultivar, though, you still see a decrease in the second half of the century. So what we get from that is just something that we all know, is that farmers will have to continually adapt, and they have been in the past. You have to change your dates, you have to change your cultivars to match the current situation that you're in. But we'll be doing things like this for the whole Midwest. A big part of the future work, and the things that I'm excited about as a graduate student, is learning to code more. Because each simulation, each phase of the study is going to involve at least 2,000 simulations, and you just don't want to be doing that manually. And then you think if you want to run it again for something else, you see something interesting, you can't be doing that. So I think every graduate student should be learning coding for this sort of stuff. It has certainly helped me at this point. And then coding also provides an adaptive coded framework that allows you to ask the new questions, like I was saying, and answer them relatively quickly. And it's also then a platform for work in other parts of the world. If I develop a framework that works in the Midwest, then I can just change the weather and the soils and run it again for a different location. This is in Kenya, which was mentioned in the keynote talk. And the challenges there for modeling are immense, because their agricultural practices are very different than ours. I want to give some quick acknowledgments to Loria Ebendroff from Iowa State. She's the project manager for the Sustainable Corn Project. Lois Wright Morin, who is the project director. And then Anthony Kendall at Michigan State, who provided the NLDAS and the CMIP-5 data. And those are our funding sources again. That's it. Thank you.